I'm Howard Bryant. Coming up next week on Only a Game, the story of a California man who taught judo in a World War II internment camp. But now the week's news with Charlie Pierce. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, Howard.
Okay, June 13th, University of Maryland offensive lineman Jordan McNair died. He'd suffered heat stroke during a team workout the previous month. The university accepted responsibility, and they fired athletic director Rick Court. But McNair's parents want coach DJ Durkin fired, and I tend to agree with this, especially looking at the history of Maryland. This isn't the first time this has happened. What do you think?
I think he should lose his job, and I think he should be in criminal court. The point that Marty McNair, Jordan McNair's father, makes, which is a good one, is that every time a coach goes into a house and recruits a kid, the first thing he says to the parents is, I will take care. You are handing your child to me, and I will take care of him. Pretty plainly, DJ Durkin didn't give a damn about the people's children that were
in his
charge.
Because this is not the pros. That cell job, you're really talking coach to parent, not coach to player as if you're in the NBA or
right,
the NFL.
Player, coach to agent, and you are talking about, in many cases, children. You're talking about kids who are under 18.
Now, what does this say to you about the culture of the coach? One of the things that we've been talking about for the last couple of years is the power of the coach, especially the college coach. You've got a huge responsibility here.
Oh, no question. And the college football coach has a particular one because of the nature of the sport. It's one thing to do things like this if you're training guys in the Marines to go land on a beach and take an airstrip. It's another thing if you're just trying to beat Michigan State.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing.
Yeah, Durkin is on administrative leave. What do you think is going to happen here?
I think he loses his job. Yeah, I think the pressure will get too great. The McNairs don't seem to be in any hurry to stop appearing and doing interviews at this point. So, yeah, I think the pressure is going to be intolerable on the university. Right. And as you said, the University of Maryland has a history of this kind of thing.
Yeah, and across the line, whether we're talking about Michigan State, whether we're talking here, Tennessee, it's about time these coaches get held accountable a little bit more. All right, the Washington Nationals won 95 games in 2016. They won 97 in 2017. And then they fired Dusty Baker. Last year, we saw John Farrell get fired after making the playoffs with the Red Sox. The Yankees fired Joe Girardi after they went within a few innings of going to the World Series. And in Toronto, as we saw too, the Raptors fired Dwayne Casey after they had won more games than they'd ever had in a season. So this is kind of a disturbing labor trend for me. I look at this and I'm thinking, why are coaches suddenly so vulnerable? And by the way, the reason why I bring this up is because the Washington Nationals now are 500. They're 7 games out. And they're nowhere near as good as they were last year. What does it say?
And their clubhouse is a mess.
And their clubhouse is terrible, which is why they brought Dusty in the first place.
Right. I don't understand. I mean, I hasten to point out that most of the coaches that fall into this category are African American.
Also?
I don't know whether that means anything or not, but it's an interesting phenomenon. You know, I think just basically, you know, we've got across the board in all sports, we've got a pretty bad crop of owners right now. And, you know, we have problems with their attempts to control their players. We have problems with their ability to manage their own businesses. And I think, you know, the instant gratification problem is really starting to catch up with coaches and managers. The Washington Capitals became untenable for Barry Trotz. So he moved to
and they won the Stanley Cup.
And they just won the Stanley Cup. He moved to the Islanders, who will not win a Stanley Cup, you know, maybe in our lifetimes. So, you know, I really do think that across the board, we have a crop of owners now who aren't particularly dedicated to their sport. They're dedicated to monetizing everything about their sport, and they're dedicated to running them like they run their regular businesses.
Yeah, but it also says something specifically about that coaching managerial job, where there was a time where the coach was the face of the front office. Now the face of the front office is the GMs, it's the analytics departments, it's everything. And so what has that done from a labor standpoint to that actual job? Suddenly, you're not the boss anymore. You're like a middle manager.
Yeah, not only that, but you are made expendable.
That's
you
right.
are less valuable to the franchise than the general manager or the analytics guy.
Speaking of baseball, a baseball signed by all of the 1939 Baseball Hall of Famers sold last weekend for a pretty amazing price. How much did it go for, Charlie?
Almost $700,000, $623,369, which is an all-timer. Apparently, it was originally collected by a White Sox third baseman named Marv Owen. He put the ball in a fur-lined glove and then put that in a safe deposit box, which kept everything pristine. He died in 1991. This is apparently the greatest piece of memorabilia.
So they just found this 27 years later.
Right. And apparently it's the greatest piece of baseball memorabilia of all time. But the previous record was a Babe Ruth ball that sold for almost $400,000. And the most paid for any baseball was a $3 million that Todd McFarlane spent for Mark McGuire's 70th home run ball in January 1999.
It's a little overpriced right now.
I was going to say, I don't think that one quite appreciated in value.
Finally, the what could possibly go wrong department. The Cleveland Browns Wait a minute. That's it right there.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Browns are the
Hold on for a second while we gather ourselves. Go ahead.
So the Browns have come up with a new promotion that helps their fans celebrate the attainment of a pretty lofty dream. What is that promotion? And I'm trying to keep a straight face, but once again, when it comes to the Browns, I can't.
When or if the Browns finally win a regular season National Football League game, people are going to get free beer. The electromagnet that's locking the freezers will be turned off through a Wi-Fi connection, opening all the freezers for fans to enjoy free of charge, which they will probably have about 11 seconds to do before they get ushered out of the stadium. but I don't know, man. I don't want my beer served up on a Wi-Fi connection by an electromagnet. That's a little scary.
It's kind of like opens the possibility for chaos, people rushing for Bud Light, but then again,
people do. They're football fans. They will already be drunk, and they'll just rush for anything that says beer.
Then again, maybe you should pay me to drink a Bud Light.
That's exactly right.
You can find the sports writing of Charlie Pierce in Sports Illustrated from time to time, and he joins us each week on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Art.
We've got some great stories in the works, and I really don't want you to miss them. So do me a favor and subscribe to the Only a Game podcast. It's basically the exact same thing as the radio show, but you can listen to it whenever you want.